No matter what the context, I think there are certain core principles of leadership. And one of them is organizations are shadows of their leaders. So we need to really remember that the behavior at the top casts a significant shadow down through the organization. People watch their leaders for clues on how to behave, how to survive in this company, how to get ahead. And believe it or not, a lot of leaders are unaware of the impact their own personal behavior has on the rest of the organization. So you have to be aware of your own leadership roles and responsibilities.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 59 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by John Childress, who is a pioneer in the field of leadership and corporate culture. After graduating from Harvard with a master's degree, he co-founded the first management consulting firm focusing on helping senior leadership teams reshape culture for competitive advantage, which as president and CEO, he grew into an international company. One of his very first culture change projects was at the Three Mile Island nuclear plant following the catastrophic accident in 1979. John worked with the management team there to build a safety culture that produced records in safety and power production for the next 38 years. John has now written 4 business books that help senior leaders understand the importance of culture in business performance and the role of the leadership team in effective strategy execution. Something that survey after survey says concerns and worries senior leaders. Currently, John is the chairman of Pyxis Culture Technologies, which has developed a visual ecosystem mapping software to help business leaders identify hidden risks inside the organization that have an impact upon cybersecurity, safety, conduct risk, innovation, and customer satisfaction. Alongside this, John is also developing a business and ecosystem approach to implementing the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. In this episode, we really explore John's definitions of 3 key words or business facets, those being leadership, strategy, and culture. Then we dive into how these 3 concepts must be aligned to deliver the results that we're striving for, or not, as the case may be. You will notice the fact that we had a few audio challenges in this episode at times, folks, but hopefully that won't detract too much from the value of the conversation. Apologies in advance for that. But without any further delay, everybody, please enjoy my conversation with John Childress. John, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's fantastic to have you with us today. First of all, how are you?
I'm pretty well. The sun is shining here in London, and it's a beautiful October fall day, so all's well.
Good. That's good to hear. And John, before we get stuck into the questions and start talking about strategy and culture, I'd love you, if you would, just share a little of your backstory, because I think it's a fascinating story there about what you studied at university and how that shaped your latter career and indeed view of business. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'll make a long story short. How's that?
Sounds good.
Grew up in Oregon, and I was always out in the woods, either fishing or hunting or doing something. And I always liked biology. I was fascinated by animals. So I went to university and I studied marine ecology, which is really looking at the marine environment as an ecosystem and how all of the animals interact and how there's a natural balance that happens. And of course, if you upset that balance, then it changes the dynamic. I went to University of California, and then I went to Harvard for a master's degree, and then I went to beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii for a PhD. What's not to like about that? And I was studying hermit crab ecology and marine ecosystems. And then I got fascinated by business because I kind of realized that if you're going to make a difference in the world, it's probably not going to be through religion or through academics. It's probably going to be through business, because everybody works and everybody's connected to some sort of a business. And that got me interested in leadership. Leadership got me interested in culture. And it suddenly dawned on me that a business, an organization, is like an ecosystem. And it's got elements in there that if you can get it right, they're in balance and you can do great things. And if you get it out of balance, you get all the things that we know of: a toxic culture, high turnover, poor productivity. So seeing an organization as an ecosystem has really been useful for me and my clients, because then they can make changes. If you try and just make changes in people's behavior, it's very hard. You know that, I know that, everybody who's tried to lose weight knows that. Okay? It's hard enough to change our own behavior, let alone a group. But if you change the elements in the ecosystem that influence behavior, then the behavior will follow. And I think a classic example is compensation. If you look at the banks and all the toxic culture in banks and the banking fraud and all the fines that they've had to pay over the last years, a lot of it's down to excessive compensation drives excessive behaviors. And so that's just one simple example.
John, what you just said really got me thinking about how often in business we can change part of the ecosystem where we put a policy or practice or even a remuneration system in place trying to achieve one outcome or one result. And so often that can lead to unintended consequences, right? Which I guess is why this ecosystem analogy is such a great one.
Yeah. And I first came across that, again, going back to biology, when on certain remote islands in the Pacific, they introduced like the mongoose in order to control a certain type of rats that had escaped and were decimating the bird populations. Well, that's just one element of an ecosystem, and it totally got out of balance. And you're absolutely right. You really got to look at the whole system if you want to make systemic changes.
And John, a few minutes ago as well, you mentioned leadership and you mentioned culture. I think both are words that are used so frequently within business. We all use them every single day, probably. But I think it's really useful and important to always get a shared understanding of what these important words mean. So for you, like, what do those two words mean? How do you describe them, define them? What is leadership and what is culture for you?
Well, you know, you realize that those are loaded questions.
And they're big questions as well.
Yeah, and I don't think there's one simple answer. So let me start with leadership. To me, leadership is a verb. It's an action thing. Leadership is not a position. It's a responsibility. And leadership is really contextual. And by that, Ben, I mean that there are certain styles of leadership that fit better in the context of a business situation. For example, a turnaround probably takes a different leadership style among the senior management team than an merger integration or a acquisition. So you have to really look at the context. But no matter what the context, I think there are certain core principles of leadership. And one of them is, organizations are shadows of their leaders. So we need to really remember that the behavior at the top casts a significant shadow down through the organization. People watch their leaders. They watch their leaders for clues on how to behave, how to survive in this company, how to get ahead. And believe it or not, a lot of leaders are just unaware of the impact their own personal behavior has on the rest of the organization. So you have to be aware of your own leadership roles and responsibilities. The other, I think the Royal Navy has it right in the sense of the captain of the ship is ultimately accountable for everything that happens on that ship. And I think that should be the same with business leaders. We've got to assume that accountability, which means you've got to get engaged. You've got to be coaching. You've got to be training. You've got to be walking around. You've got to interact with customers, you got to interact with the supply chain, you got to interact with the community, you got to interact with your employees. It really is a hands-on responsibility. I heard a really good definition of leadership that I used in my recent book, Fly Fishing for Leadership. And this person I interviewed, her definition of leadership is knowing what to do when you don't know what to do. And I think it's the courage to get out there and try and make something good happen.
Yeah. So what about culture? Kind of what's your view of culture? What does culture mean to you?
Well, I think you realize that my view is very different from the majority. And I started out in the culture. In fact, we kind of started the culture movement in 1978 with our first consulting firm. And we wrote a lot of articles and books about it. Right now, I think culture has been hijacked by the behaviorists and the HR function because they look at it as behaviors, vision, values, those kind of things. And I think those are important. I'm not negating those, but they're not all there is in terms of what makes up a culture. Again, I think a culture is all the elements inside an organization that influence people's behavior. So if you look at behavior, you're not looking at the culture, you're looking at the outcome of a culture. So we need to learn how to unearth those hidden, what I call behavioral drivers or culture drivers or culture influencers, and understand that they form an interconnected ecosystem, and you need to learn how to tweak those if you really want to improve the organization. And I think the other thing that is not so much talked about, but I think it's very important, is that culture can be a business risk. It's often looked at in the positive light of employee engagement and vision and values and that stuff, but the other side of the coin is equally powerful. It can be a risk. The wrong culture can derail your strategy execution efforts. It can derail your mergers and acquisitions. So you've got to understand both sides of the coin and treat them both as very powerful drivers.
And that's fascinating, John. So can you tell us a little more about how does culture become a risk? Is that when culture is created separately and out of alignment with the strategy? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think there's two ways of looking at culture. Every organization has a culture, whether they create it purposely or if it's by default. So default cultures tend to go to the lowest common denominator. I think that's part of the human experience. That's why it takes good leadership to create a strong, powerful, sustainable culture. When you have a culture that does not enable or support your strategic objectives. So in many ways, that can get in the way, slow down, cause people to behave in ways that aren't aligned with your strategy. So for example, if you have a customer satisfaction strategy, that's where you're really placing your bets. And yet you have very rigid policies about how much discretion employees have to satisfy the customer, you've probably got a cultural risk there. The other one is if you don't keep evolving and updating your culture, because the world is changing rapidly. Technology is probably the biggest driver, but so is globalization. We're no longer isolated as individuals or companies, and we need to have a culture that really embraces what's happening in the world. And if you don't update and talk about that and refresh and realign your culture, it can become a risk.
And John, I've got a copy of one of your books in my hand as we're talking right now, Fast Break, The CEO's Guide to Strategy Execution. And in there, I'm looking at the graphic you have, which is part of your Fast Break strategy execution model. And you've got corporate culture, and I've asked you your kind of take on culture. It's got leadership alignment and then the strategy on a page roadmap. But just continuing this theme of getting really clear on what these important words mean, can I also ask you to tell us what does strategy mean to you? How do you define strategy? Because I think it's fair to say you've got a slightly different view on that as well, have you?
I think that's my curse. I got lots of different views. Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's very obvious. If you don't have any competition, you're really won't need a strategy. So it's all about gaining advantage. And it's not only gaining advantage with the competition, but it's gaining advantage through your culture as well, making your culture a strategic advantage. I think someone said, it's easy to copy a strategy, but it's tough to copy a culture. Amazon has a great innovation strategy, but they've also got a very strong culture. Trying to replicate that same culture, you can replicate the strategy, but I don't think you can replicate that culture. That's grown up and been a part of the organization and is really nurtured. Netflix is the same way. You need to understand that strategy and culture are sort of two sides of the same coin. And unless they're aligned, it's going to be really difficult to execute on your strategy. And the statistics of strategy execution are really poor. If you think about it and you read about it, there's a lot of articles bantering around somewhere 60 to 70% of business strategies don't deliver on their expected returns. And I don't think it's because of a poor strategy. I think it's because of poor execution. And one of the things that gets in the way of poor execution is a culture, and particularly a culture of silo behavior between functions. And I think you know what I mean there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Marketing's not talking to manufacturing. Manufacturing's not talking to engineering. Engineering's not talking to finance. And you just cannot orchestrate, because strategy means new ways of doing things. You don't develop a strategy based on an old pattern. You develop a strategy based on a new way of competing in the marketplace. So it's going to mean changes. And if those functions aren't willing to work together, share resources, share ideas, share people, share budgets, they're not going to realign that ecosystem in a balance that's going to support your strategy.
So is that why, John, also I read in your book that you say that strategy execution is a leadership issue, not a management issue. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? And do you say that because it is down to this lack of alignment and sort of entrenched siloed behaviors? So is the hypothesis then that leadership needs to be strong and fix that?
Absolutely. I think a good story is when Alan Mulally, who was from Boeing, came in to be the CEO of Ford. It was definitely a turnaround. I mean, they were losing billions, and they weren't able to really deliver on a good business strategy. And it's not because they didn't know the automotive market. I mean, those guys are professionals. They know the manufacturing, they know the marketing, they know the customers. But he realized pretty quickly that they were a kingdom of silos, and they weren't going to develop a new strategy or execute a new strategy unless they could really realign themselves and shift resources around. And so what he did was a great example of how elements within the organization drive behaviors. He took the whole senior team and he put them on one compensation plan, not their functional goals, but one simple goal, and that is making Ford profitable and a great place to work. And he forced them just through realigning their compensation. Nobody got their bonuses unless the whole team won. And I think that's a simple but a very profound example of how you really need to rethink, well, what is driving the culture and realign it to fit the strategic needs of the business. And he did a great job.
John, I'm fascinated by this topic as well, because the siloed working or a siloed culture is probably more common than we would all hope and want it to be, right? It's kind of a challenge that so many businesses, MDs, CEOs wrestle with. And there's kind of one great example from Ford that you've just shared there. I wonder, from all your research, writing the books, all your experience consulting, are there any other really great tactics or solutions you've seen different organizations use to try and break down that siloed nature?
Well, I think the basic principle of how you align people is with shared objectives. The problem with functional thinking and functional behavior is that people in the function get aligned with their functional objectives, whether it's their budget, whether it's their sales quotas. Their budget is driving those objectives. And I think you can answer this question, Ben. Do you think it's possible that one function can exceed and do a great job in its budget and the whole company fail?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally.
And that's exactly the whole point. So we need to align those shared objectives so that people are all in the same game. And for some reason, that's not been done. And I put it down to the way MBAs educate people. They educate them in functions, whether you're in the finance function, whether you're in the marketing function, sales function, HR, whatever. That's your focus. And at a leadership level, at a certain level, you've got to turn that off and turn on the shared objectives of the enterprise. The enterprise has to win. If the enterprise wins, we all win. I think that's the basic understanding.
And I guess this brings us nicely back full circle to this ecosystem metaphor, right? In that if I'm being compensated and given goals that are purely aligned to my silo or my function, I'm going to do all I can to hit those. So I'll be focused on those and less focused, less interested, less collaborative, let's say, with my peers leading other functions. But worse than that, I guess I might make decisions, choices, take actions in order to hit my goals that could actually be detrimental to you in your function achieving yours. Not just is it not supported, but it might actively make your job harder, right?
Absolutely. And I've seen it in so many organizations where people hoard the best people. They won't give them up. They sandbag their budgets so they can have extras, whereas somebody else could really use that. Those are just two simple examples that I've seen over and over and over again. And that's why I fault leadership for that. I fault the CEO for not understanding that he or she has the responsibility of the entire enterprise and must get those people to align. I mean, I've sat in business meetings and watched two vice presidents argue and the CEO does nothing. And I said, boy, that's not leadership from my standpoint, because that just degrades the whole culture. And I'm sure you've seen in the military where the Army's not cooperating with the Navy, Navy's not cooperating with the Marines, and yet you've got a joint task force.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wish I could say I hadn't seen that, but absolutely I did. Yeah. And seeing as we're talking about kind of the CEO here, I wonder, again, in your experience of this, have you noticed, or what would you say are some of the differentiating factors between those CEOs and MDs that are able to get traction and deliver the strategic plans and those that they don't? And really here I'm thinking around sort of the behavioral traits, the personality characteristics. Have you noticed the difference between those that succeed and those that they don't in terms of strategic execution?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and I think I have. First of all, it's not just personality. A lot of people think, well, to be a CEO, you've got to be an extrovert and a controlling, dominant kind of person. I don't think that's true. I've seen great introverted CEOs. I've seen great analytical CEOs. But I think what really matters when a CEO is building a strong organization is that they are 100% engaged. They are engaged with people. And I'll go back to what I think I said earlier, Ben. Leadership is about engagement, engaging with the customers, engaging with supply chain, engaging with the community, engaging with employees at all levels, but really working hard with the top two levels of leadership. I think it was Ralph Nader who said, the purpose of leadership is to create more leaders, not more followers. And to me, that's where a lot of them miss. They look at the expertise of their management team and they allow them to kind of get on with their individual tasks. And it really is a team effort. It's a group effort. There's no question about it. And somebody's got to be the coach and the developer of leaders. I think one of the biggest travesties of leadership is that you don't have replacements for yourself that are better than you.
I think that was certainly one of the conclusions that came out of Jim Collins's research, right, in Good to Great. One of the distinguishing factors, I think he called it level 5 leadership. Leaders who are always looking to develop the next level of leaders and leave the organization in a better place. It's the same principle, I think.
I think it's exactly the same principle. Again, I go back to what I said. Leadership is not a position. It's a responsibility.
And John, we have many people listening to this podcast who are on a journey toward becoming a CEO or MD in the future. So for those people who may be looking to get there in 5 to 10 years times, let's say, what would you say those people should be looking to do right now in order to become a great strategic leader, a great executor of strategy in the future? What are some of the skills and experiences they should be seeking out?
I've written a lot about this. I think that's a great question. What I advise developing leaders to do is volunteer for the worst assignments.
You know what? I've heard that from so many guests on the show.
Well, maybe because that's a good principle.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the only way you're going to build muscles is to lift heavier weights. The only way you're going to develop greater leadership skills is to put yourself in harm's way. Mm. And there's a lot of Teflon leaders out there who shirk the responsibility but accept the limelight. And I think if you're really going to develop leaders, your leadership skills, then take on those tough assignments and then collaborate. Get as much input, ask as many questions, ask for help, because you can't do it alone.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes absolute sense. And John, I'm always conscious of my guest time and listeners' time. So probably just one quick fire question to finish up, if I may. Other than your own, obviously, what would you say is perhaps the one book that you've read that's really had the biggest or a significant impact upon you? What's the one that really stands out?
I know you're going to ask that question. You know, when I was a young man, I had to ride the Greyhound bus from college to home on the holidays. And late one night, somebody gave me a book, and it was by Viktor Frankl. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. Mm. And I don't know if you've ever come across that book, but basically he was in one of the Nazi concentration camps, and he was a psychologist. He was just fascinated by how some people had a will to live and they survived and others didn't. And it all had to do with believing that they had something meaningful to offer the world, and that drove them to survive in that, you know, that terrible situation. And I think there's a lot of analogies. I think the way people perform is if they believe strongly in something that's larger than themselves, whether it's a cause, whether it's their nation, whether it's their family, whether it's their business. It's bigger than them as individuals. And I think all people rise up to the occasion when that happens. So that book has stood out for a long, long time in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's somebody recommended it to me about 3 or 4 years ago. It truly is an incredible book. It's not an easy read, is it? But it is so, so powerful.
No, but it's gripping. The other one, I think, is Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And it sounds like it's a social media type of come on, but it's been around for a long, long time. And it really has to do with organizing your mind and your emotions towards your goals. I think that's very important as well. You can't sleepwalk through life. You're an active participant.
Which links to some of the lessons from Viktor Frankl's book, right? Around having this purpose and working towards something bigger, which I think is fascinating, because I think in leadership, personal development circles, purpose or having a why has that, to use the phrase that was coined by Simon Sinek, has sort of become quite trendy on vogue at the minute. But I think for anybody who perhaps is skeptical about the power of purpose, I think Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl is a great place to go and explore into what it really means and how it can really help you, right?
Yeah, it is. And the other thing I would say is that leaders are not loners, they're collaborators. And that's not often taught or popularized. We've popularized the hero, the super person, the superman, superwoman at the top. And yet you'll find all the really successful ones are avid collaborators.
John, I think that is a wonderful place to finish. Leaders aren't loners, they're collaborators. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me and my listeners, John. Thank you so much for sharing your experience, wisdom, and expertise. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting to you, and I know that everybody listening will take huge value from it. So thank you very much indeed.
You know, Ben, it's been a pleasure. You've asked some great questions, and I like your podcasts, and I just urge you to keep them up.
I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks, but most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.